Hi, this is Daniel Garb of the Movies for CulturalMining.com and CIUT 89.5 FM. Some people's biggest fear is of a late night phone call from a hospital that someone close to them, a child, a parent, a grandparent, a lover, or a friend, has suddenly died in an unexpected accident. Something you can't predict. It's devastating. But what if that death was by suicide? How do you deal with news like that? Why did they choose to do it? Was it somehow your own fault or something you could have somehow prevented? Well, a new film looks at survivors of suicide loss and the effect it has on their lives. The film's called Love, Harold, and it's a sympathetic and very moving look at how the aftermath of a suicide, how people deal with an aftermath of a suicide by talking with the friends, partners, or family members of the ones who died. This NFB film is written and directed by renowned Toronto-based filmmaker Alan Swag, whose deeply personal and intimate documentaries look at people, including himself, facing crises, both major and mundane, in everyday life. His films have won numerous awards, including the prestigious Platform Prize at TIFF, a Genie, and a Canadian Screen Award. I've covered many of his docs and interviewed him at this station before, including 15 Reasons to Live in 2013. And I also Alan off mic through work, mutual friends, and used to be my nearly next door neighbor. Alan is also currently hosting a self-help podcast called Tubby about weight issues. Love, Harold is the centerpiece film at the Rendezvous with Madness Film Festival on October 24th, and I'm very pleased to have here with me, digitally, Alan Swag to tell us more about Love, Harold. Hi, Alan.
Hi, Daniel. Nice to see you again.
Thanks so much for meeting with me again. And before we start in this interview, we're dealing with suicide and the effects of on survivors of suicide loss. So listeners, if you need support services, please call your local distress center. Or if you need immediately help, please call or text 988. So, Alan, why did you choose to make a documentary about such a serious topic?
Well, I probably was a little naive when I started. I definitely was. It was just basically, you know, my friend Jim killed himself. And, it's not the first time I thought about suicide and how it affects people. Although most of the times I've been affected by suicide, it's been by a lot of them musicians. A lot of musicians I really loved killed themselves. But anyway, when my friend killed himself, I didn't think about making a film. Then later that summer, we went to a book reading, and a friend, my girlfriend, had written a book with her sister, and her sister had killed herself before the book launch, kind of almost like the book came out, then she killed herself, then there was a launch, so the launch was like a wake. So then I was thinking about it a bit more, and then actually, two people called me out of the blue, and just one of them, who's in the film, well, they're both in the film, one of them basically said to me, remember that guy that I really wanted you to meet? Well, I'm going to his funeral today. Do you want to come with me? And it just seemed, you know, at that point, it was swirling around me enough that I could think, you know, maybe, you know, I was thinking about it enough. I didn't know how I would make it. I didn't know how I would approach it. But given that I was meeting people who were themselves the survivors, I thought, well, rather than make a film about the people that killed themselves, I'll make a film about the people that are left behind.
So at what point did you pick up a camera and say, this isn't just me thinking about it, but this is an actual film?
Well, I mean, the curious thing is that at that second event where my girlfriend's friend, Martha, who's also in the film, I saw a woman I know who was a film board producer. So it turned out she and I both knew Martha. and the sister had killed herself. So I thought, and that's kind of an in. So I went to talk to her and Justine Pimlott. And, you know, the film board development process is a very long process. There was a long time. But basically, the day I talked to Justine, which is now like 6 years ago, that's where it began. Then we were in COVID and things. But, you know, so it was probably 5 years before I really started shooting it.
So in the end, there were 20 subjects in the film. Were they all people you knew or people who knew people you knew?
That's a good question. So at the beginning, I hired a researcher. And the researcher could not find any stories through no fault of their own. But I guess the normal way of whatever they do, it requires the stories to be somewhat public for you to find them. And in the end, you know, for instance, we found a story of this father, and he said, well, if I were to be in your film, then my brother would find out that my son, his nephew, killed himself. Mm-hmm. In other words, we haven't told people this. So I think that was definitely, I mean, I think that anybody who's lived in this world realizes that to some degree, people feel shame around suicide and that it's a taboo. But until I started looking for people to talk about it, I had no idea how deep that went. So in the end, of the, I believe, 23 people in the film, every one of them came to me either as a friend or through a friend, except for one. We found one story, this young man, Patrick, who's Filipino, and he was making a film about his own brother's suicide, and so somehow that got on our radar. But other than that, no, it had to be acquaintances or acquaintances of acquaintances.
He was also a younger subject than most of them. Go ahead.
I'm just saying, it's the it's like the odd thing about the film is that I'm asking audiences to listen to stories that collectively, apparently, we don't want to hear. Otherwise, the people that I interviewed would have had an easier time in their lives sharing this story. So the odd thing is, for me, that I really care about having an audience almost more than I ever have, because I just so want the people who talk to me to feel like they were heard.
One of the reactions you say is one of shame. A more surprising thing I saw in your film is the emotion of anger. Why were people angry? That's the one thing I didn't expect, is because people were furious.
Yeah. Well, I can think of one person in particular who says that his first reaction was anger. And, I mean, I guess when you leave, the people you leave could have the feeling that you did this to us. And so I don't, you know, that's the thing about the film, is about how people deal with it. So, you know, I never asked anybody how did they do it or why did they do it. Occasionally talking about how or why was part of how people dealt with it. So in that case, I would use it. But for the most part, it was just kind of like, what has your mind gone through in the last 2, 5, 40 years to make sense of this, because it just seems like it's something that, you know, kind of defies our own sense of the word, the world, and it's the great mystery, like. And so on some level, you never get rid of that mystery. You might come to terms or come to peace with it. So, you know, among the explanations one might have, it's like, yeah, he was so mad at me, he wanted to put me through this. You know, like, I don't know if that's a fair theory, but it's an understandable theory. Like, you're gone, I'm in hell now, it's your fault.
There were some people who, as you said, some people were talking about something that happened a year or 5 years ago, and sometimes 40 years ago. Do you think the passage of time helps to heal, or at times are the emotions just as raw, even though they happened a long time ago?
No, I think it's pretty clear that the passage of time sends it to maybe a deeper place in your soul or your mind. I don't know that the passage of time would heal it. So, you know, in the film, I use the story of my friend Jim, but I don't feel like at all in the same position as most of the people in the film. For me, the grief of my friend's loss was not as deep because we had been so out of touch. But on the same time, we had been so close that his suicide haunted me. And what was left for me was, yes, the mystery of why. And though I don't, like, you know, nail it in the film, because that's not my practice, I do feel like I reached some closure on that. But I can't extrapolate that to other people in the film. I feel like, you know, there's somebody in the film who says the grief at the moment that it happened, if it's going to be like this forever, I can't go on. So I know that the people who felt it sharply at the beginning, that pain has dulled, but I don't think it has left.
And as the filmmaker, you're like face to face with these people pouring their guts out, and you're an empathetic guy, Alan. So how did it affect you filming people telling these stories?
Well, I don't know how far to go with this answer, Daniel.
Okay.
But I felt honored. I felt privileged. I felt, yes, there was one point where maybe it had sort of been building up in me, and the raw emotion in the room made me feel like it was like, I don't really know what a moment of grace means. I don't know what the religious significance of that is, but I've said this before, I felt like the room was suddenly kind of bathed in light. Like, it was just like way in the background, there was, you know, I don't believe in angels, but there were like angels singing. And they were saying, you are witnessing life and love and emotion, you know, and you should, I don't know, in some ways, yes, she's really sad, but yet, isn't this kind of beautiful, this moment you're experiencing? I'm not, you know, like I'm not at all a religious person. So when I felt it, I was almost afraid to tell people that I saw a room bathed in white light and the angels were singing. But that is the closest thing to what I was feeling that I can say. And, you know, I don't think I can recreate, or I don't think I can give the viewers that feeling as strongly as I had it in the room. But on some level, that became the goal in the editing of the film, to make this film with strong emotions as light, if I can use that word, as possible. Now, some people could see this and say, well, what that guy just said is pretty brutal. Yes, I felt like I had to allow some brutal moments in. But I think it's odd when I talk to people and I tell them the film is about suicide, that their reaction, even their sort of cringing expression, is almost worse than it would be if I were talking about, you know, children dying in war. I don't know. I don't want to be glib about it, but that's all I'm saying is I've seen those documentaries. When people tell you it's about that, I think on some level people are like, well, that's an important subject. Whereas this somehow, I don't know, scares people. And I just really would like to say, anytime I get a chance, we made the gentlest version of this film that we can. And it's 90 minutes. You know, you're not going to see a film like this every week. Spend 90 minutes of your life and experiencing what your fellow human being, your next door neighbor, is going through and hasn't shared with you.
And I want to say, so people who are say, oh my God, what a downer, but the movie does end on a very warm and positive note, and I think that's important too. So you don't walk out of the movie feeling sad, you feel sort of uplifted.
Well, that would be nice.
And to end the interview
from
on
your lips to what? God's ears.
And to end this interview on a lighter note as well, let's talk about your new podcast called Tubby, which is described as a self-help conversation about weight, but it's done in a fun and irreverent way with a different guest each week.
Okay, so it's, I don't know who's said it's a self.
That's what it's described on the site. It says
it ends. The people who make these, not us, but the people who disseminate your podcast, have to put it in a category. And so this one is put in the self-help category, but it is purposely not a self-help thing. There's plenty of help and self-help for people who struggle with weight. The idea of this show was simply to talk about what it's been like in your life to struggle with weight, the funny and sad stories of this thing that you've been carrying around. Like I say, like, you know, I made a film about record collecting and one about being chronically single and one about being negative, but I could have just made it about being fat all that time and the way that was affecting everything, but I didn't make another one. But the idea of the Tubby is just fat people to, you know, talk about being fat with no advice about how to, I mean, maybe, you know, if somebody really wants to tell me how they're losing weight, I don't mind hearing it. I can talk about how I've lost weight too, but that's not the point. So,
and I've listened to, there's only three episodes so far. I listened to two of them and they're actually a lot of fun to listen to.
Yeah, I think they're, and also if you're not fat, it'll help make you feel better about yourself that you haven't gone through the crap that we've gone through.
So thanks so much for talking with me, Alan.
Thank you, Daniel.
Alan Swag's deeply moving documentary, Love, Harold, is premiering in Toronto on July 24th at Rendezvous. What?
October.
It's October. My God. October 24th at the Rendezvous with Madness Film Festival, and will be released later this year. And you can find Alan's podcast, Tubby, on leftofdialmedia.com. This is Daniel Garber, the Movies Eat, Saturday morning on CIUT 89.5 FM, and my website, culturalmining.com.